Welcome back to the Ripley Recall. I'm Mr. Tony Housie with the Public Affairs Office here at Camp Ripley's Training Center.
Lieutenant Colton Rosso, today we're diving into the harshest battlefields on Earth. Not a city, not a desert, not a jungle, but winter itself.
That's right. We're talking about winter warfare and cold weather survivability. From Napoleon's retreat out of Russia to the modern Arctic training exercises by us and our NATO allies, winter, of course, has shaped history in a powerful way.
The thing about winter is it doesn't pick sides. Snow, ice, wind, and sub-zero temperatures punish and unprepared. Yeah. Whenever you're invading army or defending your homeland.
Certainly. Yeah, it's brutal and it's non-biased. So it's going to get you one way or the other. And I think the preparation for that is a year-round exercise.
100%, 100%.
So let's start with an obvious example. And I brought it up before, right? So let's talk about Russia. You know, the worst terrain, especially in the wintertime, right? Invading of Russia. Napoleon's invasion in Russia in 1812, right? And now some will look at it as a major success, but it's an absolute failure at the same time. I mean, the loss of life was significant.
Yeah, and Napoleon marched into Russia with over 400,000 soldiers, most of which never returned home. They not only suffered logistical issues, but defeat on the battlefield time and time again. And by the time he retreated, only a small fraction of his army returned to France and really destroyed his capabilities.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, Russia's tactics as well, they play on that. And that was what helped destroy the Grand Army.
Yeah. I mean, lesson learned. Preparation and adaptability matter more than just the sheer number in an extreme climate.
Right. Yep. And, you know, it didn't stop there. You know, World War II, the same situation happened.
Yeah, when Nazi Germany launched Operation Barbarossa in 1941, they expected a quick campaign. And, I mean, I think we've seen that recently, too, with certain nations trying to do the exact same thing. But instead, they've got one of the coldest winters in decades and just consistent fighting.
Yeah, and equipment froze, right? Lubricants turned to solids. Engines wouldn't start. Their power, their drive, right, came to a halt. And that was what was very crippling about them. Soldiers with lack of proper uniforms, frostbite illness, cold weather problems, the casualty rate soared, and the entire operation fell apart.
Yeah, and the Soviet forces were better prepared. They were fighting for their homeland. They were fighting on their turf. They had winter gear, skis, experience, operation in snow-covered terrain. They trained specifically for this moment. And the cold weather maneuver, it didn't stretch out their supply lines. They knew how to fight in this type of climate.
Yeah, certainly. You know, and winter's not the only thing that wins wars, right? There was magnificent logistical weaknesses and punishing circumstances with overconfidence of how to operate within a certain amount of time frame. Once winter hit, it was all downhill from there.
Yeah, and if we look at probably one of the best examples of winter warfare, that actually happened before the start of World War II. The Russians had prepared for this during the Winter War from 1939 to 1940 between Finland and the Soviet Union, where the Soviet Union not only struggled, but they learned a lot of lessons from it.
Very much so, yeah. The Soviet Union had an overwhelming supply of numbers. You know, their mass production of simple tanks, artillery, manpower, and again, that expectation that they would quickly overpower the small Finnish forces was to their defeat. It was not to their benefit whatsoever.
And what the Finnish soldiers used was mobility. They were on skis, white camouflage, knowledge of the terrain. They split the large Soviet formations into smaller pockets to what they called Modi tactics.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's cold weather. The use of cold weather is a force multiplier, right? Small, well-trained units beat larger forces. Very effective in deep snow.
Yeah, and like we said before, lessons learned, preparation and adaptability matter more than the sheer number in extreme climates.
Absolutely. So, you know, let's shift a little bit, right? Let's shift from history to survivability. Cold weather isn't just uncomfortable, it's deadly. And that's been proven time and time again. Whether it's ice fishing without being prepared, any type of military maneuvers, right, or even, your kids going sledding.
Yeah, and when we're talking about cold weather, you know, I was just walking outside today, and I was a little bit chilly, and it's not even that cold up here. But, I mean, when we're talking serious cold, we're talking hypothermia. We're talking frostbite, trench foot, dehydration. And you did hear me correctly. Dehydration in winter and calories burn faster when your body is trying to survive and keep up with conditions. We've all heard the stories of, you know, hikers lost in the woods and their limbs are freezing off and they're getting frostbite, and it's not good. It's dangerous.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In freezing temperatures, your body burns more energy just to stay warm. It has that instinct to do that. And, it keeps driving as you keep moving on. And sometimes it runs out of fuel, right? Soldiers, for example, may need somewhere between 5,500 to 6,000 calories per day, as opposed to a usual 3,000 calories in garrison or normal training events.
Yeah, and one of the key critical things to do is layering. I mean, it's critical that you're layering your body up. But mm-hmm. also, moisture is what is a killer. If your socks get wet, if your gloves get wet, you're going to feel it, and it's going to start to drain on you. Insulating mid-layer, windproof outer layer, cotton kills. It holds that moisture in, and it really creates a dangerous and uncomfortable situation for soldiers.
It does, and all those things that we're used to as far as our own creature comforts and whatnot may need to be adjusted a little bit as, you know, your mission changes, your environment changes, and, you know, the outlook of where you're going, has the different effects and whatnot. So you might need to pack differently, you might need to prepare differently, and you might need to dress differently.
Yeah, I mean, and going on that, another historic example of this was the Chosin Reservoir during the Korean War.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, temperatures dropped to minus 35 degrees Fahrenheit in the frozen Chosin. The weapons froze, equipment stopped working, and the 55,000 Marines and allies were surrounded by 120,000 Chinese and North Korean soldiers. So they were up against a wall, and that rock was being pushed up against them at the same time.
Yeah, those wounded Marines, they risked freezing during evacuation. Yet, the 1st Marine Division fought its way out, demonstrating discipline and resilience under unimaginable cold by desperate ingenuity and adaptation.
And those types of things, you know, there's shining examples of that throughout history, but with a little bit of preparation and a little bit of foresight, that doesn't need to happen over and over again.
100%. So let's talk about modern winter training today. So what about today? I mean, our modern military is absolutely trained for this winter warfare.
Yeah, certainly. NATO forces regularly conduct Arctic exercises. Norway, Canada, Finland, Sweden. These are just some of the nations that invest heavily in cold weather capabilities. And it's their education and their lessons learned that have pushed throughout organizations like NATO or a lot of their allied countries to the fact that we're not always going to fight in the desert. We're not always going to fight in the jungle. You know, we're not always going to fight in the winter as well. So we need to be prepared for a versatile situation as it comes out.
Yeah, I mean, here at Camp Ripley ourselves, we just had the Norwegians here training for winter weather survivability. I mean, right. It's a real thing, and especially at the battlefields that we're looking at today, Ukraine, Russia, these are cold environments. We've seen historic examples of that. And, you know, the U.S. Army operates Arctic training programs in Alaska, and cold weather leaders courses emphasize survival shelters over snow mobility and Arctic logistics.
Yeah, certainly. You know, modern doctrine focuses on multi-domain operations in cold regions, including the Arctic.
Now, if we're going to take some key lessons learned, let's break down some recurring lessons from history.
Logistics win winter wars. If fuel freezes, supply lines fail, combat power collapses, the organization's done. You know, the operation is done. All that preparation on the forefront, whether it's weapons qualification or tactical maneuverability, if your logistical aid stops, you're done. So the preparation there needs to be with those logistical support elements as well.
No, 100%. Number two, clothing and equipment matter just as much as a weapon.
Certainly.
I mean, you can shoot a weapon all day long, but if you're freezing there, your hands, you know, freeze up, you're not able to pull that trigger on that weapon, you're no use to your organization.
Right, which leads us to number three, and the training in that environment is non-negotiable. I mean, it isn't always in the cards to be able to train in those types of environments whenever we want to, but to be able to understand what it's like to be in the cold, how to operate, how to recover yourself, those are important lessons.
To finish it off here, lesson number four, small mobile units often outperform large, rigid formations in snow-heavy terrain. You don't want a large force going through the snow, eating up supply lines. You need to be small, agile, and mobile.
Absolutely. And it's more of a case of the defensive is the better offensive in the winter operations like that.
No, 100%. I agree with you, Tony.
So climate change is also reshaping Arctic accessibility, right? This means our competition in the northern regions is important, and how we position ourselves, how we support our allies, and how we're aware of what our defensive capabilities are makes up that. So as we, you know, transition over the next few years to be more specific about winter operations and Arctic capabilities, that's going to become a forefront for a lot of our formations.
No, and you know, we see on the news all the time talking about the new training going on in the Arctic about strategic locations north of in North America, in Asia. I mean, these are real concerns, and you know, which is why modern militaries are investing in specialized cold weather brigades, improved mobility platforms, and then insulated shelters and energy efficient systems. I mean, when you're in a state of war, especially in a rigid climate like that, you can't be wasting resources. So the fact that we're looking at new ways to not only conserve energy, but to make sure that our soldiers are kept safe, it's really exciting.
Yeah, certainly. You know, and part of that is into technologies, you know, as far as the operating of our drones, for reconnaissance or even offensive or defensive operations, satellite communications and being able to operate in an area and understand where everybody is. Cold resistance batteries are changing a lot of the things that we do as far as technology. In the past, equipment has needed to be cared for with extra effort. Some of that has been changing and making it more adaptable to cold weather operations. But the human element always remains central.
Yeah, I mean, winter warfare isn't just about fighting that enemy alone. It's about the environment every second of every day. And if your soldiers are put in that type of environment, they don't have the proper gear, training, or education, they're not going to succeed. And as leaders, that's our job to make sure that they are put into the right element with the right equipment and the right objective.
Yeah, certainly. So let's talk about a little bit of the winter training that we have here at Camp Ripley, or that we've seen over the past few years. You know, one of the training elements that comes out significantly is the U.S. Coast Guard and the U.S. Navy utilizing Camp Ripley's lakes for under ice diving and primarily for the setup of a base camp in cold weather operations.
No, 100%. I mean, something not new, but something that we haven't had here in almost 5 years was having our armor brigade come up here and do winter training with the M1 Abrams.
Certainly, yeah. So driving a 70-ton vehicle in snow and ice is a lot different than sand or even in mud. Those capabilities of what the drivers and the crew need to learn as far as how to operate in the snow, in the ice, and in extreme cold weather is invaluable. And that happens right here, so we're able to do that.
I mean, we're one of the only two armor brigade combat teams left in the Minnesota National Guard. What do you think the importance of us being in a northern environment like this does for our type of training?
You know, it throws variables at us that aren't as user-friendly as it would be to put together a training plan, but it will give us the opportunity, the capabilities to do those different trainings within different conditions. We still have to meet the same standards, but those conditions will change a little bit, which will give all of our soldiers and airmen the opportunity to experience those variables, experience those conditions, and then apply them back, making life easier for them in the overall picture.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. I mean, you know, cold survivability is discipline. It's training and it's leadership. And if you don't have any of those things or you don't have a combination of all of them, you're not going to succeed.
Absolutely.
And, you know, ultimately, winter rewards those who respect it. And I think here at Camp Ripley, I'm starting to respect a little bit more. I know you're a native of the north up here, Tony. I'm down from the city. So right. I maybe turn up the heat a little bit in our office. But it's all about adapting to your environment and figuring out the best course of action for your soldiers.
It is. And we're learning that, you know, even through our partners. We have the Canadians that come down from Thunder Bay and Winnipeg. They do training here and be able to pick their brains and talk about how they adapt in winter operations and cold weather survivability is important. Yeah, the Norwegians, when they come over annually as part of that organization, and the Minnesota National Guard soldiers and airmen that we send to Norway as part of that exchange. They come home with a ton of information and experience.
Oh, and like you said, just talking about the Canadians, they'll be coming here later in March to do a training exercise mm-hmm. with us. So if you see any green vehicles on the roads, those are the Canadians coming down to visit Camp Ripley. So don't be shocked.
Right.
Well, you know, Tony, this was a great conversation today on winter warfare. And, you know, I just want to thank all the viewers for joining us today's episode. Please stay warm and stay prepared.
Yep. Thank you. We'll see you next time.